Oh, hello, and welcome to our case study call for the month of February 2014. This is for NEPT, and I'm excited to have you here. These are our new calls that we've added as an extra special feature of the program because we get a lot of requests for people wanting us to do case studies and review their case studies. And case studies are a little bit different than just submitting a lab and ask my opinion of it, or actually just asking questions about a particular client. Those can happen on any of our calls, really. But I set up these case study calls so that we had a specific form, a specific input form for you to fill out to get your request known so that I get the background I need for folks to be able to, for me to be able to, and for you guys to be able to understand the case and what's going on. The case study form that I put together is something that's really what you need to be collecting on everybody that you're working with anyway. And if you are interacting with another practitioner, you know, an MD on the case or a nurse practitioner or someone else or another practitioner who's referred them to you because of your expertise, and you got to be able to share information back and forth in a way that gives everything we need. One of the things that you'll learn, the more you go through, and if you've not already been through the history module, you'll learn it when you go through that, it's super important to get a thorough history on everybody. It doesn't mean that every single possible question needs to be asked on every single person, but there's some basic stuff we need, and then we'll go from here. This form actually has the basic stuff that I believe that we need for everybody, and then I've added extra stuff in there, and ask us extra questions. So for these calls, for these case study calls, here's what's required. If you want to have a case reviewed, then you fill out the case study call, and it's on the INE case study form. It's on the tab, the resources tab on the website. You fill that out. You tell me about the person you're working with. If it happens to be yourself, that's fine, too. I don't mind that. We'll all learn from it. But actually, there used to be a question on here that said, this is a client or this is a family member or this is me. So I'll probably, it doesn't matter at this point, but it's really a good thing for us to know if we're talking to you, because then you can answer the questions. But it's okay for it to be you, because everybody, the purpose of this is for you to get information that's useful for you in your life or in your practice, but also for everybody else to learn from. So it's fine if it's you. And the way that it works, you upload the case, you upload any extras, any extra labs or diet diaries or anything else that they've filled out that you want us to review, and you upload that with the case, and then we take it from there. So there's two ways that we could use these case study calls. One is you could submit a case that's for where you want me and the rest of the group to help you with what's the next steps, or to confirm that you're on the right track and you've come up with the right next steps. But also you can use these as you get further along in the program and you're ready to do certification requirements. One of the things that you can do is you can submit a case and you can go through it. You can take us through it for your certification requirements. One of the things that people who have done these in the past have done to pass their certification requirements is that they've done a little PowerPoint presentation, so taken all the information off of this form, put it in a PowerPoint, and then added to it, these are my observations, this is what I think might be going on, here's my next steps, here's what I did, and here's the results. Those can be cases that are already, that are still in process. It doesn't mean that it's something that's come to fruition and they've moved on and they're happy and happily ever after already. So that's how these calls will go, and then I can get through one or two. I doubt I can get through more than one or two unless they're really super, super simple cases, because I want to go through them really thoroughly with you so you have an understanding. So before we get started, are there any questions that you have at this point or comments you want to make at this point before I jump into the case that we're going to do today? I will add that what I will be doing is I will ask you to fill these out in advance.
preferably several days, you know, three, four days in advance. So, because there's some setup that's required to get, you know, downloading files and making sure that we have everything. And if I get it that day, there'll be a scramble and I won't be able to do it. And then day before could be tight depending on my schedule. So I prefer to have it a few days in advance so that we have time to download the files and then I have time to set it up so that all the files are accessible during the call. Let's see. I think that was all that I wanted to say about this. And then I wanted to check to see if Sequoia is on the line. She might be on the web. I don't see her. There she is. Good. So, Sequoia, I'm assuming you're listening in on the web because I don't see your name here. So what I'm going to do is I'll actually open up the line for you. But what I need is if anybody else is listening in on the web, let me see if anybody's on the web that's not on the phone. Valerie, Vanessa might be. So what I'm going to ask everybody who's on listening in on the web to just mute your phone right now because otherwise I can open up the line and let Sequoia speak, but then I may hear a whole lot of background noise. So if you're on the web listening in, mute your phone. Okay, and I unfortunately can't figure out how to open up. Oh, audio connection. Let's see. There we go. Got it. I figured it out. So I'm going to unmute everybody, and then Sequoia, unmute yourself, and then say hi. Sequoia? You there, Sequoia? Sequoia, say something in the chat because I don't hear you online. Let me see. Volume, is my volumes are good. My speakers are up. I should be hearing you, and let's check the chat. I'm here. Okay, so speak on the phone so that I know that you're there. Are you speaking? Is everybody seeing my screen? By the way, when you call in using JoinMe, it's very easy to unmute and mute yourself because the little phone icon, or if you click on the little thing with the three dots and you drop that down, it will let you choose to either raise or lower your volume or turn your mic off. So I'm just going to proceed, and it won't let me unmute. Let me see. Set it so that callers, let me just check it again. Audio connection. Okay, I'm going to pause the screen and I'm going to go over here. And it says others can talk. Okay, try it now. Okay, Sequoia, now I can. Yeah, now I can.
Okay. That's fine. This works really well. Actually, we use it for all of our team meetings, so that it works well. It's just the coordination between the two. I mean, we can certainly try doing it on just this, but then people don't have the phone. So let me just share window again, and I'll share your. Okay. So I'm just going to go through, and you can interject. Is there anything you want to say about this person before I go through some of the basic stuff that you've put in? It's you. Okay. There we go. Okay. So we have a 120-pound, 5'4" person. So normal weight, not overweight, not underweight. Health consultant, single. Top three concerns are thyroid, blood sugar, and lipids. And I will say that for some people that you're working with, some of them will actually give you, like, body systems that they know are off because doctors have told them that. But others are going to say more symptoms as opposed to conditions or parts of the body. They may say, you know, fatigue or belly fat or whatever else.
fatigue stage two. And that was came on after the second car accident, the adrenal fatigue. Okay. Good. So interventions, October, sorry, my phone is ringing. Move it out of the way so you don't hear it. So October and November, let's see, palpitations, extreme fatigue, tachycardia. This was back in this past November, October, November. Okay. Felt flu-like for several weeks. Had been taking pregnenolone for 3 months. Stopped when the results came back hyperthyroid. Did you lose weight at that time? Did you drop? And so that's typical of hypothyroid. Somebody suddenly... Okay, so it's come back up. So, and the things that you did was you stopped the pregnenolone. You've been taking it because of your adrenal fatigue. And even when you were addressing this adrenal fatigue, was that when you were having difficulty with the weight, or was there difficulty before that, before you addressed the adrenal fatigue?
I think I had a light from the adrenal fatigue. Okay. So it was but then I had a car accident.
And what you're saying is very typical. So people, you will hear this when you start to talk to people about their fatigue and some of the symptoms that come on. It's always really important to go back and ask them about a car accident or, you know, some sort of a trauma in their life. And a lot of times they don't relate it, so they're not telling you. They just don't see it as related because Sequoia is a health professional. She knows the connection, and she made that connection for herself, fortunately. But a lot of times you'll see that. So broken bones and surgeries and whatever else, they can impact people for years to come by throwing off their adrenals and throwing off their whole hormonal system and throwing off even the microbiome. So very common. And when you hear post-exercise fatigue, I want you to just put that up as a flag that's saying, uh-oh, there's probably some adrenal issues going on, right? So the combination, the car accident, the post-fatigue, I'm going, okay, she needs to be checked for adrenals. So she got her adrenal test, started taking the pregnenolone, took them for 3 months, and started to lose weight and have tachycardia. So again, I want you to be pulling out of here the things that you're going to be looking at as far as red flags go. You hear somebody says, I've been having difficulty losing weight, and then suddenly I start to have palpitations, fatigue, tachycardia. Those are things, tachycardia meaning increased heart rate. Then that's like, whoa, those are symptoms that are of hyperthyroid. Losing weight, palpitations, tachycardia, and the extreme fatigue, which you go, well, I thought people with hyperthyroid would not have fatigue. No, they're exhausted because they're just putting out so much all day, right? Their metabolism is burning like crazy that they get exhausted. So that's a combination that's not uncommon. But the other thing you want to be thinking along these lines of, and you'll get more and more into this as we learn more and more of the body systems in more detail, but the combination of first she couldn't lose weight and suddenly she's dropping weight like crazy and has symptoms of hyperthyroid and possibly the other symptoms of not being able to lose weight, you could explore that, like did you have constipation, dry skin, and all that. That's like, wait, hypothyroid, hyperthyroid, autoimmune condition, because with that, you end up with what they call thyroid storm, where the thyroid gets really active and then it goes back into being really low. So those are all the things, by just by that tiny little bit of history so far, that we're starting to think, right? We're not diagnosing. We're just thinking about what the possibilities are. And look how little information we got to be able to say, let's look at her adrenals, possible Hashimoto's. You're writing this down. So as I'm going through this with you, what I suggest you do is take out a piece of paper and just jot down some of the pertinent history findings that we're going through right now, because these may come back, and we're going to tie it all in to the labs when we look at some of her labs. Is there anything else you want to add there, Sequoia, before I move on? Yeah, like 98.6 is what it should be, and so yours is probably more like 97, even maybe 96. I don't know how to make the conversion real easily in my head, but yeah. So that's another clue to ask them about that. As you hear stuff like this, you're going, I'm thinking thyroid, so you start asking some of those questions, assuming you don't have it in the rest of the history, like, you know, body temperature, how are you? Do you tend to run cold or hot? Did you check during this period of time in December, November, December, by the way? Okay, so you don't know if it was elevated during that period when you were losing the weight like that. But that's a good thing to know, is that
I was still cold.
So it was still cold. So that's a good thing. That's a good point, too. And when you have this mixed hypo-hyper type of thing, you will still have a combination of some symptoms from one and the other. So the fatigue is way more common with hypo, but like I said, people with hyper get exhausted, too, because they're burning so much. But on the other hand, you'll look at the temperature. With hyper, it tends to range to be high. So if it was more of an autoimmune, sudden, like an post-viral autoimmune attack on the thyroid or something else like that, you might be much more compartmentalized symptoms of hyper. So let's move on. She's got... let me put my headset back on, but then people on the phone can't hear you. So... let me raise my phone volume, and let me raise my mic volume. Is it people that are on the phone that are not hearing me well? This is what I asked right at the beginning, so let me stay as close to the phone as possible. Is that better? Vanessa said I can hear you fine. Valerie says you can barely hear me. Valerie, can you hear me better now? Better, but you can't hear Sequoia? Well, I have it going through my... hang on one second. Let me see. Okay, try that. Is that better?
Can you hear me now better?
That's better. Okay, good. Okay, so I summarized everything that Sequoia had said anyway, so let's just move on. I do have it recording, so we can go back and listen to it. Okay, so let's just go through some of her attitudes. She went to see, so you went to see an endocrinologist back when this was happening to have some testing done?
Yes, I actually saw that endocrinologist.
Okay, good. And you can tell us more about that in a bit. So some of the stuff we know about Sequoia, she does have a healthy diet. She does have a positive attitude. She does do too much like all the rest of us, so that's that. Those are some of the negative stuff.
She's got some major stressors, a special needs son, and her own health. And let's take a look at the diet. She's strictly gluten-free. She has a clean diet. She's drinking clean water. I'm assuming you're drinking half your body weight each day?
I drink water.
Plenty of water, no harmful chemicals, no pain exposure. So you've taken out the toxic laundry soaps and cleansers,
yes,
and all that stuff. Okay. Okay, so this is long term. So, okay, good. So TSI is less than 0.9. So TSI is actually the test for autoimmune hyper, for Graves, basically, less than 0.9. So that one's there. TPO is 9 and thyroglobulin is 11. Neither one of these are showing in a range that I would expect to see these kinds of thyroid storm up and down types of responses. So while there is some positive response there, they're very low. They're borderline. They're just a little warning signs at this point. It's possible that they could contribute, but I'm not really thinking like that's the main culprit here. So I'm thinking, let's look and see what else is going on.
I was also wondering if because of my constriction, there might be some autoimmune. I had adopted a diet to get numbers down, so I don't know what they were before, right?
Right. So during this phase when this was happening, it could have been in a flare. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And what diet, explain to people what diet shifts you did to make that happen.
Well, there was, having a clean diet, but also adding in things like that help the numbers go down, like the selenium and other things. I can't remember all of them now. But I was pretty rigid on it for a while anyway.
Okay. Okay. So these are her numbers, and these are December 2nd, 14th, and January 20th. So this is all within a month and a half time period. So her TSH went from 0.02 to 0.01, which is already low, to less than 0.01, so non-detectable. Were you on thyroid medication at all up until this point? Okay, so there's no medication and her TSH is that low. So I'm suspicious of either hype. When I just see the TSH of those numbers, I'm suspicious of either hyperthyroidism or a pituitary issue, one or the other. She just saw the TSH, can't see what's there. So I look back and I say, well, what's her free T4? 2.12 is high, and that was in the middle of all this stuff, right when you first noticed and got it checked. Right, but just go back and refresh me because I don't remember the exact dates you were having the issues. So the 2.12 was when you were still having the racing heart.
Yes, that was.
Got it.
I got when I went to the doctor.
Okay. Okay. And then the 1.17 was 2 weeks later, so it came down quite a bit. And what did you do between the first and the second? You what?
I went off the pregnenolone.
You went off the pregnenolone. So here we go, and like, wow, pregnenolone did that. Something with the adrenal is affecting her thyroid. So that's a big piece of something to be looking at. Did you go back and test your adrenals again? Not yet. Okay, so that's a good thing to do. So we went from that all the way down to 1.34 in January, but the TSH is, no, it's not substantially different. I mean, it looks on paper like it's less, but I mean, it's so indetectable at 0.01. That less than 0.01 is not that much different, but still, it's not getting any better. The TSH isn't increasing, even though the thyroid is decreasing, right? So she's down to 1.34, which is in a good range for free T4. She's at 3.34, which is in a great great range for free T3. We don't see numbers as good as that, yet her TSH is super low. So what would you just off the cuff just say to that? What are you suspicious of at this point?
Well, there's a couple of things. And it's something else that I also want to say. There's some research
that goes back to what I was trying to fish for with pituitary, because one of the reasons, what happens when you've got either you're taking supplemental thyroid or somebody's in a hyperthyroid state is that TSH gets so low because we're suppressing the pituitary. Right? So we're suppressing the pituitary because we don't need it to stimulate the thyroid, and it may take a while for the pituitary to wake back up. And one of the things I worry about with people on long-term thyroid medication where they're keeping it at the TSH so low, they're not allowing the thyroid to kick in, and the pituitary just goes, it gets lazy, and there can be a long-term depression. So I'm still going to say the pituitary, it might be a normal lag, and that's something to look at and retest this in another month and see. But it could be an abnormal lag because the pituitary might be kind of off. Now, if you go back to previous years when you've had your thyroid tested, is this typical of your TSH or has it been kind of normal or higher?
I've had
Mm-hmm. So normal levels. So this isn't common. This isn't like you've had this depression for a really long time. Okay, so we're looking at what can be happening here to suppress the pituitary, right? And to suppress, to put these levels down. And I'm thinking in terms of, well, pregnenolone, adrenals, what comes together up top is in the pituitary we're doing the adrenal corticotropic hormone, and we're also doing TSH. And when one of those gets suppressed, the other one can low in function. So let's think about the mechanism of taking pregnenolone and probably giving and raising cortisol levels and maybe getting a negative feedback to the pituitary, like so it's not producing the ACTH. And then it's also affecting the production of TSH. This is just, theory. I'm just trying to think through mechanisms, like what connects the two. How would that taking pregnenolone, affect the pituitary and the thyroid? So I'm thinking in terms of, like, it really would be good. It would have been good to get an adrenal test right then and there to see what was going on, to see if you had been taking the pregnenolone for too long and it was causing your cortisol to get too high.
I was like, I just knew that there was a,
and that was just like an intuitive hit, or did you think it through, or what made you think that? So then you recently got so tell me what the endocrinologist had to say here.
Thyroid palpated it and said it was normal. suggested that I, you know, do ablation. Right?
Oh my God.
Or remove it altogether. And I just, I sat there and I was like, what poor guy.
He has no clue.
That's all he knows.
That's it.
Look at all the things that get, all the people that unnecessarily get this done, and he's basing this on two blood tests
and his palpation.
And I said to him, this is only two blood tests. My TMH was normal before that. And he didn't even have that in front of him.
So you know, this is the this for that approach to health, right? Oh, I see TSH being low. Oh, I feel her thyroid. Yeah, it feels a little bit enlarged. It's toxic, not multinodular goiter, and I'm going to ablate her thyroid. That's what he knows. That's the thought process, as opposed to the thought process we've just gone through in the last few minutes of thinking through the various mechanisms and all the possibilities. Okay, so I assume you refused his treatment. Okay, so how would you really look at to see? I mean, if he palpated it and he said they're tiny nodules, how would he feel them if they were that tiny?
I don't know, but I he's quite aggressive with me testing. It was all, I always felt like I have to get a diagnosis.
Okay.
So, and that's coming up next.
Okay. That's worth doing.
I wanted to do the other one with radioactive testing, and I
said no. Start with the least invasive test as possible. Absolutely. And you give it some time to get back into a normal groove. And you support it. I mean, if indeed the thyroid is over-functioning, which it's not according to these numbers, by the way, so it could just still be that the pituitary is coming back. So according to the free T3, free T4, thyroid's functioning perfectly fine. So she's not at risk of having problems associated with a hyperthyroid. She's not having the symptoms anymore. The palpations are gone. So there's a lot of time here. If somebody's numbers had come back with the free T4, you know, at 4 and the free T3 at 6, boy, that's putting a tremendous load and burden and risk on the rest of the body, you know, pumping that heart too high, pumping the blood pressure up too high. But symptomatically, she's back under control. It's just trying to get to the heart of what's going on here. What symptoms are you still having? You said you're not having the palpitations or the racing heart. What's still there? Are you still exhausted or you've got your energy back?
Well, I've got good energy.
Yeah.
And I just had a follow-up. So I guess that the thing I find most frustrating is not being able to get back into a decent level, what I would consider a decent level of exercise, because I keep happening and getting in the way, and sometimes I'm just really just tired for the next few days.
Has that happened recently, that exhaustion for the next few days? Did that go away while you were on the pregnenolone at all?
It's usually only lasting a day. So it's not bad, I think. So I think it's more finding, because I like doing the exercise, right? So I have to kind of just cut back and go into it more slowly to get my body accustomed.
Yes. Yes, you just said something that's really critical that people need to hear when they're working with people, because there's the people who hate exercise and just anything is problematic, but there's people who, like, they've been exhausted, they can't do the exercise, they get back into it, and instead of easing in, it's just like, oh, I love this, oh, give me another 25 pounds, let me lift this, let me run more. So it's really cautioning that, and so, you know, creating that space for yourself so you can get 10 minutes a day of exercise for a week. That's certainly better than nothing, and it's better than getting exhausted. Increase it to 15 minutes. Increase the intensity slightly. So give yourself like 6 weeks to build up to a level of exercise and see if you can get your body to do that. But in the meantime, please get your adrenals tested again, because I want to see where they're at, because if there's still some adrenal stuff, you want to address it, but in another way than pregnenolone. Now, this is something where we can do some research. Did you look for any research that says, you know, risk of hyperthyroid with pregnenolone?
Yes.
And did you find anything? Okay. Okay. So there is that. So, you know, when we go back to adrenals, and I know we have that as part of the protocol, but it's not always the first line that we want to do necessarily with someone unless they're, like, totally burned out and exhausted. You know, I would say starting with some of the adaptogens and the nutrients and all that, and using the pregnenolone and DHEA and the hormonal verses after we've done some of the other things. And you did. So her diet's good. You know, this is all the stuff that we would normally go through. I've downloaded all these tests. So is there anything else in the – let me look. Just let's look at the tracker real quick. Let me open that one up. Open that up from here. Open study folder for it. Anybody have any comments or anything they want to say at this point? Opening up her Master Health Tracker, and I'll share that with you in a moment. Is that okay to share?
Okay.
So I'll see share window. Yeah, and so anybody that, if things were breaking up when we were talking earlier, you know, the summary of this with Sequoia is that she had a lot of history, trauma, et cetera, accidents, et cetera. She was in stage to adrenal fatigue when she tested herself, a lot of the post-exercise exhaustion that we see in adrenal fatigue, started on an adrenal protocol, had been on pregnenolone at the I'm assuming, stage 2 level, like whatever, 10, 12 drops a day, three times a day, something like that. Is that what you were taking? Of the pregnenolone. Holy cow.
I'm very sensitive to
So what this says is that whenever you're giving any of these over-the-counter bioidenticals or even any kind of herbs that have a potent effect, start people slowly. You know, if they're a sensitive person, because that's a totally tiny drop, and that was having a huge effect on you. Look, this is her health tracker. We can see her adrenal numbers from back in last April. Very low in the first thing in the morning, low at the midday, got into, you know, close to normal in the afternoon, normal and at night. And here the DHEA was 6. And I'm wondering here, and, you know, I'm learning through this as you are, I'm wondering here if normal levels of or close to normal levels of DHEA like that might be a contraindication for the pregnenolone. Because, you know, pregnenolone can go in any direction, and I'm just wondering. For too long, you think it okay. So that's another thing. So here's what I recommend is that when you're working with people with their adrenals, if you are going to suggest that they take pregnenolone or DHEA, or if they decide that they're going to based on your education, that you have to retest sooner rather than later. Okay? And if they do a test and they do a whole bunch of herbal things first and then decide they're not feeling that much improved and they want to try the DHA pregnenolone, get another test before you do it. Because it did help her, but then it was too much, and that was only on 2 drops 3 times a day. So this is a really good learning experience. Really good learning experience. Now, is it possible that she's had this quote-unquote multinodular hyperthyroid for a long time? Sure, anything's possible, but given some of her other numbers, and before I get to those other numbers, I'm just seeing your ridiculously low vitamin D. Have you had that retested? Yeah. Of course, because you're up north and you don't get a lot of sun. So, but here's the thing with this. You know, you are, but you don't know if you're taking enough, and you don't know if you're taking too much. Okay, so if you're not taking enough, how much are you taking?
Okay.
All right, so you've got some level of measure that you're using, but still in all, that can help to support the adrenals. So if you're working with somebody and their adrenals don't seem to be getting better with the things that you think they should be getting better with, the vitamin D can have an amazing response both for adrenal and thyroid. So since 2012, it might be worth having a look at that. I don't know how you can get it done or if there's any way to get it done without the doctor's orders. I know a lot of people...
have to get a doctor's order and then
pay for it. Okay. You might be able to get somebody to order it at least. And it looks like you've had some... Oh, but you're back up. You're 81. These are out of order, so that's okay. Globin A1C is perfect. What makes you think you have some blood sugar issues? That there was some viral thing, but I would certainly just recheck that and you know, a couple months and make sure that maybe 3 months, make sure that it's still okay. It goes back to being okay. Otherwise, it indicates a chronic. Now, you don't know if you've had that before, as far as I can see, because it doesn't look like that was tested. But elevated monocytes can be recovery from a condition, but it can also be related to a chronic thing. So if there's a chronic inflammatory thing going on, it certainly would be elevated. You know, your CBC is good otherwise. Let's see. Hemoglobin is a little bit on the low side. Red blood cell count is a little on the high side. White blood cell count is a little on the low side. So the low white blood cells with the high monocytes leads me to kind of think in terms of some kind of chronic, whether it's a hidden infection somewhere, could be a GI infection, it could be at an old surgical wound or an injury area where there's not complete healing there, it could be autoimmune. Those are the things I think about when I see those numbers.
It is.
Yeah, so, I mean, it could be infection. Have you done a GI panel? Have you looked at your gut? You know, it could be a parasite. It could be a candida overgrowth. Absolutely. Absolutely. And their tests aren't very good for it anyway. I mean, really the way to do it would be Doctor's Data or somebody that will ship it across, which they will. Doctor's Data certainly will. BioHealth will. And ship you a kit. Well, I would say that the Doctor's Data, I usually use the BioHealth because of if I'm suspicious of something like H. pylori, and if you are, if you've got other symptoms like that, that might be the case. So usually the way I like to do it is I'll do a BioHealth to start to just get the overall, and they will pick up if there's parasites, if there's yeast, if there's other stuff, but it's not specific. So then you have to, and since you have muscle testing at your disposal, you might be able to use that to kind of specify, okay, these are the possibilities, which one is the right one for me for dealing with this. So it's not really, it's not specific as far as how to work with it. You can use general antimicrobials and all that, but you don't get specific. Doctor's Data gets specific. Doctor's Data also gets specific with the function of the GI test and in inflammatory markers in there. So if you just want to get pure microbial, I would say BioHealth is the best in terms of sensitivity. They tend to really pick things up that sometimes others don't, which is why I usually like to start with them, and then I move on to the Doctor's Data to see how everything's going after we've put them on a protocol. Yes, can also do an oat test, and that will give you microbial markers or toxic markers from those, so it's chemical markers, arabinose and other things like that to see, and then that would also give you ideas of your nutrient status. So that's another possibility that Jamie just recommended. Lynn, you asked the question, does she have any liver issues? What does that mean? Like, well, how would you quantify that? How could you ask that if you were asking that of Sequoia, not Sequoia, the health practitioner, but the Sequoia, the client? Okay, so I could see that they haven't even done any other testing because they did your numbers, and the last one you did back in 2014, your TSH was perfectly fine. I'm just going to take a quick look at the rest of your lab to see what other flags I see. HDL is kind of low, and that could be the lack of exercise over the years that you've been struggling with this, but it can also be related to blood sugar and low omegas. Your cholesterol's low-ish, according to this, but it's not terrible. Let's see. Your alk-phos is low. Remember what that indicates? Or could indicate? Do you remember? could be low zinc. It could be low zinc. So, and zinc would be related to the function of your thyroid, the function of your immune system, the function of your adrenal. So zinc is important. So the indication here is that you need more zinc than whatever you're getting.
Yeah, well, I started.
Okay. Good.
I must have looked it up at the time. Back on the
zinc. Yeah. So the sodium potassium ratio is a little off, indicating adrenal stress. Creatinine is low. Okay. Yeah, they just never do full panels, do they? I mean, anybody I get from Canada, the panels are just like so sparse. There's all these holes. We don't get to really fully see all the things that's available. And yeah, your fasting blood sugar is on the high side. So I would be looking at things like your B vitamin status. Oftentimes vitamin B1 is low when people are having trouble with the glucose, you know, that borderline glucose stuff. It's just a low B1. That can also be helpful for gut and just regeneration of tissue in general. So the two nutrients that I could pull out of here would be zinc and the Bs, especially B1, to help support you in this. And as far as the thyroid, I don't see, you know, your conversion issues. I don't see any conversion issues. Your numbers are really aligned there except for the TSH. So looking at the pituitary and just kind of riding the wave to see if that normalizes again as you pull out of this situation. But address the adrenals, find out what's going on with them now, and really address. And really, 3 to 4 months is the longest I would go between adrenal stress tests while you're working in the active state of healing. Yeah, hypochlorhydria is certainly possible. All my fun signs of hypochlorhydria are here, except the creatinine is low. So, so certainly hypochlorhydria, you know, you always want to look at that. Jane had some really good results with what I had talked about on another call. I was reading a book called The Medical Medium, and he was talking about how he finds that celery juice, he announces the celery juice every day is a really good support for hydrochloric acid production. So that's an easy thing to incorporate.
I think that was for a month.
Yeah, well, Jane did it. She reported yesterday that she did it for about a month, and her digestion has never been better, and she did some of the other things in that book. And that book is very food-based, so you might, you know, consult with that and see what you think's going on there. Let's just take a quick look at some of your other tests for completeness. I already looked at the biohealth. I can show everybody the biohealth so that we can switch to that. I think we already did, but this was the biohealth, and this was the one you did back in April. Yeah. So these are the numbers, and I think we saw these because you put them on the chart. Let's see what else. And then I'll check for questions. The biohealth. And then we have the detox and the methylation panel. Let me see if there's any other questions for a second. What do you think it is in the set? Yeah, there's a lot of minerals besides the sodium, I don't know exactly the mechanism, but I think it's related to the high levels of minerals in there. So it contains unique sodium compositions, and these mineral salts are bound with many of the bioactive trace minerals and nutrients. That's a quote from the book. What are her liver panels? Well, her liver panels they are not generally done in completeness when we do them through the Canadian healthcare system. So there's her albumin is fine. Her alk-phos is low, so that wouldn't suggest liver toxicity. That would more suggest zinc deficiency. Her ALT is fine, and none of the others are there, so we don't have GGT or AST or LDH or any of those. So hard to say. Might be coming in. and you say great, as we have lots of growing garden. And it is certainly an easier thing, you know, it's a more food-based, you're not, you know, I'm not a big fan of supplementing with HCL. Same way with the bioidentical hormones, you got to be really careful, really careful. Let me look to see who else is on, if anybody else is on the web has. Here we go. Any questions? If you have any questions at this point and you're on the web and not a, and you haven't typed them in, go ahead and do a two, and then I'll answer those questions. And in the meantime, I'm going to put up, just take a quick look at the genetics and see what we have there that might help to see. So let's look at methylation first. I'm going to go back and get the thing and see if I can do them next to each other. I can see your questions come in as we look at this. And Jamie, you mentioned on another call, you gave a really good reference for a program that you really like that takes the raw data. And I used it, and then I can't find the link to it anymore. I was trying to give it to someone. So, and I really did like it. Metabolic Healing. Okay, so Metabolic Healing. I'm going to write that down. You have your own or you have some clients. I think it was like $35, but it was a really nice report. Thank you. Yeah, so if we look at her methylation here, I don't see any questions, so I'll move on. If I look at her methylation, like for what kind of things are out, she's good in her COMTs, which is great, which is related to dopamine, norepinephrine, serotonin, but also estrogen, you know, not high risk for those bad estrogen metabolites. So DDR, so you do have to be careful with your vitamin D. Those are related to vitamin D. And there are other things like FUT2 and other kinds of genes that are related. Sequoia left. Are you still there, Sequoia?
No, I have to come back in another 3 minutes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so there is some MAO activity is related to some, you know, high stress, so which people with MAOs do tend to have more of that hypervigilance, and I see a lot more adrenal stress in there, and you really have to work with the heart math and all that stuff, and I know you have the positive attitude, but that's something you have to really maintain, because people with the MAOs tend to be real hypervigilant in my experience. She does have MTHFR 677T, which is the folate issue, and are you supplementing with folate, or are you just relying on a lot of green leafies? Anything?
I think the advanced ones, that's all active
forms of meat. Great. Be good. This is a person where, you know, sometimes I'm really careful about adding the methyl, too much of the methyl B12 or folate because of this COMT being red or yellow. She's got greens. She's all clear there. She's not going to get a big backup, so that's fine. Is it a sublingual? Does it have the B12 in it?
It's not a sublingual.
Okay. So my only concern here is if you've got an MTRR, which would affect your B12. If you're taking the B12 in a B complex and you've got some stomach issues, are you not, you know, making stomach acid, or you have some problems with intrinsic factor, which is common, then you may not be getting all the B12 you think you are from that. There's just
I did for a while. I was doing one because I had this form.
Yeah, so you can even get on the mode of just, like, you know, once a week doing a sublingual or a liposomal B12 just to keep up those levels, because usually it's high enough levels in that and you don't have to worry about them being a higher level. You can rely on your liver storing it. So I would say, you know, if you took a couple of thousand a week or 1,000 a week even, you might be good, probably more like 2,000 a week, and do it in a sublingual and then just rely on your Bs for the rest of them. Yeah, so nothing else really jumping out at me as far as related to this, what's going on. Let me see. And again, somebody presents with a particular problem, you don't just rely on, you don't just work on that particular problem. You want to work on all the basics, and because there are, everything's interconnected. So I'm looking here. Wow, this is one of the cleanest detox panels I've seen.
Oh, maybe all those coffee
enemas
work.
Well, knowing this is genetic. So, you know, yeah, this is great. I've not seen one this good ever. Jamie, have you seen a lot of them? Have you seen any cooking this good? CYP1B1, is that the caffeine? I always have to look them up. No, Jamie hasn't either, and he's seen a lot of them too. So 2C9s I know are related to some of the drug metabolites. I think the 1B1 is as well, and we have that chart in, I can't remember if that one's caffeine or not. I don't have these memorized. I just look them up. I don't know if you remember them either, but Jamie, but I'm going to just look it up real quick.
But I have sensitivity just about any drug I've ever taken.
Yeah, that would be that 9. So, yes, it's the estrogen one. So, you know, you have a little bit of a dip in... or a genetic tendency towards not doing really efficient metabolization of estrogen. But given that you've got that, the open COMTs, and you're in a clean diet, that's probably not a concern because it's just a heterozygous. But be aware, you know, of that kind of thing. If ever you're doing estrogen replacement, make sure you're doing DIM and make sure you're doing the right forms and make sure you stick with your cruciferous. So all the things, you're doing all the right things for it already. You're doing all the right things that I would tell somebody to be doing with the 1B1s. And you do have two heterozygous, so there. You're doing all the right things. Make sure you keep up your cruciferous and broccoli sprouts and those sorts of things. I find that when I travel and I don't get to eat the fresh greens and I'm just relying on my powdered stuff, it just isn't the same. I'm just going to look real quick to see if you have those in here. A few others related to D. So, you know, FUT2, which is related to whether you're a secretor or non-secretor of your blood type into your gut, which affects bifidus, and bifidus affects, you know, the whole sulfuronization of the from the cruciferous. So, you know, the D is a big issue for you, so make sure you keep up with it. There's one green and there's a red and a bunch of yellows. Yours are way better than mine. When I did the more advanced test, they had more FUTs listed on them, and I am 100% red on FUT too. So, and I'm a B negative, so I wonder if having that.
I'm a B negative too. I'm a B negative.
Oh, interesting. Well, at least we stay friends, and we can we can share blood if we ever need them. I know somebody else healthy with a B negative. Yay. Anyway. So Lynn just put up Lynn just put up a good link to the vitamin D with the thyroid, the link between D and thyroid. What do you mean, Lynn, really they can be different? Genetically is different to MTHFR support and metabolic healing. Now they report the alleles, huh?
Yeah, I have my MTHFR support open, but I don't have that.
Yeah, I've got that one here. I'll just share the screen with that. Let me just read what Jamie's saying about that one. Share window. Okay, there we go. On which, you mean specifically on the CYP1B1? So I was negative on GG and plus plus on MTHFR support and metabolic healing. And that was for FUT2? That's interesting. Well, FUT, no, it couldn't be FUT2 because Gen 19 doesn't do it. On CYP. Oh. That's strange. Let's see what it is. CYP, CYP1D1. So this shows up that she is plus negative. But this one shows an additional one on the 1B1. Let me look to see how that compares to your other one. Let's pull it out. You can see them next to each other, and I'll put it on the, share the whole screen. So your 1B1L432V shows up as plus plus. It shows up as CG, which is the same. Your 1B1N53S, interesting. Here's one that shows up as a, oh, so it's the interpretation. It's not the allele. It's just how it's interpreting it. It's interpreting it. That's interesting to look up the research on how that should be interpreted. So the CYP1B1N453S, is that the one on you that was different, Jamie? Hers is showing TT on both of them, but it's showing as a homozygous on MTHFR support, and it's showing as a normal on genetic genie. So, yeah, it's exactly that. So let's just make a note of that. I'm going to make a note of that somewhere, that particular SNP, there's an issue with interpretation, probably with genetic genie, because its two other places are interpreting it differently. TT okay. Good. Thank you. Thanks for pointing that out. We'll have to do some searches on that. Yeah, and he posted some screenshots on that too, I guess of his. Let me see. I click on his screenshot. Yep. So it looks exactly, his is exactly the same as yours. You see it? His is, shows up as a CC. That was on MTHFR. Which one did I click? I think I clicked on the MTHFR. Yeah. So his is the opposite of yours. So one of you has good ones and one of you has bad, but... wait, no. His shows up as CC. No, both of you. He's a CC, and one of them says he's good, and one of them says he's not. You're a TT. So it's an issue of which one, actually. They're homozygous, yeah. So it's an issue of which one is right, actually.
I think it's so fancy.
Support better than, yeah. I think they have a little bit more research. And plus his this other thing, this methyl. What's the other one he called it? Not here. That other report. I really liked that report. So, you know, for those of you who have your own tips, just go ahead and run that report and see what you think, because it makes it easier to explain it to a client when they've set it up that way. Okay, so let me see. I think that's it. I just was going to look at your vitamin A because of that affects thyroid receptors, and it's a BCM0. One, I believe. No? Maybe I'm spelling it wrong. Is it BMC01? Yeah, it's on the page that says I. Let me just look up E-Y-E. Okay, there you go. Yeah, so you've got one heterozygous on your BCM01, which affects the conversion from beta-carotene to vitamin A. So that shouldn't significantly affect you with all the beta-carotene foods that you eat. So I wouldn't worry about that one too much. You could look into vitamin A. The reason I say this is because it affects your thyroid receptors.
You know what? And I have a feeling about vitamin A.
Vitamin A, okay. Well, test yourself and see that maybe you do need it. Yeah.
Oh,
Well, I mean, muscle loss can be a lot of things, okay? It can be related to testosterone levels and testosterone estrogen ratios. It can be related to various nutrients. It can be related to not enough protein, low stomach acid and not getting enough protein in. It can be related to not having enough cofactors for creating the muscle mass. So not having enough, you know, zinc is super important and all those cofactors, magnesium. So it can be related to a lot. It could be related to not exercising enough.
What about the body?
Well, it could be breaking it down as well. So it's the building up and the breaking down. And so that can have to do with too much cortisol. Cortisol will break down muscle. Is that recent, the body muscle thing, or something from before? Well, your creatinine was low. But again, not a full, you know, full panel. So any number of those things. So cortisol will break down muscle, not enough testosterone, or, you know, testosterone estrogen ratio being off, testosterone cortisol ratio being off, not enough protein or not enough absorption of protein, not the right kind of protein, zinc, and anything to do with amino acid metabolism.
Although my cook looks like I digested everything, I just don't feel like I digest properly.
Well, then you might consider doing the doctor's data comprehensive. It's pricey, it's like $350. But you know, when you run these tests on yourself, you make it an investment to give it an investment in your education as well as your career and your own body. It's a multifaceted investment because it's going to give you the ability to learn how to read those tests in an environment where you're not feeling pressured, like you're supposed to know, and you learn those tests and you get to see what's going on in you, but you also help to enhance your own health. So, you know, I think it's worthwhile to run a lot of these tests on ourselves. Okay?
Yes. Well, that's great.
Any other questions? Did I miss anything in the chat? If you've got something that you put in the chat and you had a question for, just go ahead and retype it. And I'm going to pull up anybody on the line have a question. Just type your 1 on your keypad. Okay. Type a 5 if you think this was helpful. You want to do more of these? Type a 3 if you think it was wasn't that great, you didn't learn very much. Amy liked it. Helpful, Vanessa says helpful. Yeah. What about the rest of you? Just kind of neutral, not sure? Might be that you're not far enough along in your studies for all of us to make sense, and it won't. But the point is about all of these, when we do these labs, this is just another part of it. Yeah, we'll give you lessons, and you've got all the ways to go back and look at the videos and learn the biochemistry, and some of these will give you places where, oh yeah, that's going to be great when I learn that more. Most of the stuff we talked about today, you can find good information on already on the site, even though we haven't put the formal thyroid, adrenal, and all those modules up, because Shine, there's all your videos and audios from Shine last year, which was on the HPAT axis, so that was 2014, not last year, but 2014, and there's a ton of information there. There's also, you've got access to, if you're in the mastery program, you've got access to our Thyroid Revive and Thrive that I did for consumers, and it's loaded with information. And I highly recommend that on those more sophisticated modules that are really in-depth and you're going to see a lot, is that go through the consumer, the VLM programs first, and that'll prepare you. And then you'll go, it'll be a second pass through, so a lot of the terminology will be really familiar, and you'll be just like, you'll be floored by how much you learn.
I have another question.
Sure.
How are it taking iodine?
You know, because he's saying that there's a goiter or some nodules, it can, and you're heading, leaning towards the hyper in terms of your TSH, I'd be super careful because I want you to test it first.
Now, I know when I take these, I always feel better.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, I would say start with just really regular consumption of seaweed and see if that makes a difference. Since you are so sensitive and only two drops of pregnenolone gave you results, you probably don't need the 25 to 50 milligrams of iodine. That's a therapeutic dose. So I would say get in the habit of just doing your sea vegetables regularly. And a combination, the browns, the greens, the reds, the ones that have the most iodine would be kelp, digitata in particular, but kelp, digitata tends to, well, I'm not sure about the digitata for you because it has some preformed T3, T4, and it might, until you get your TSH normalized, I would just do it with food and I wouldn't overdo it. You need it, but why go on iodine if you can get it from food? I would get a test done to see if you're normal. What, just go eat, you know, just get to the point where you're not like stuffing yourself full of seaweed all day, but you're eating seaweed in a way that you feel comfortable. I had this urge for seaweed the last 2 days, and I was making these big bowls that I put dried maitake mushrooms and a whole bunch of different seaweeds and just pour hot water over it and then add some seasonings and just like, I want another bowl of this. So if for whatever reason my body was craving it, so, but you don't want to get to the point where like, I just can't eat another bead of seaweed, you know, just get to the point where you're comfortable with it and then that's something you can maintain and then go test it after a few months of that. But I'd be cautious of it right now.
I've never been at that point.
And just eat it. Just eat it. But I wouldn't worry about supplementing it, and I certainly wouldn't recommend supplementing iodine right now. I would wait, but eat the seaweed. Support yourself that way. Amy said great. Yeah. So you have another question? I kind of... Yeah, I see that. That's what I was looking at. He said it's great to have multiple labs to cross-reference, and yeah, that's the whole point of these, so we're not getting like little glimpses, we're seeing the whole thing. I have a quick question regarding testing amino acids. Do you prefer urine or plasma? I haven't run either of them, but I've heard mixed opinions partially due to instability in plasma. Yeah, it's a great question, and we do address it in the pros and the cons of each when we do that particular module. And I would say that the jury's out, and it has to do with what you want to do. They are not going to be as stable in plasma, but the urine is going to be the excretion of what the body isn't using anymore, right? So I've heard that if you're looking for particular metabolic defects, the plasma could be more effective and the urine is good for more testing levels, but it does need to be like a 24-hour urine as opposed to a spot urine. So you're collecting everything. I think that if you go to the Great Plains, has a couple of good articles on their site about it, and I just don't remember all my sources, but I have a bunch of different articles that we have in the amino acid module. But yeah, I'm not 100% sure which way to go sometimes, and it's just a matter of really looking at each particular case. I think it's a lot easier to do plasma because you don't have to send them off to a lab to get the testing done. So for those of us who are not in a state that where you're allowed to order tests for people or if you're working with people long distance, it's going to be much easier to have them do plasma. So you don't have to arrange for lab draws. So, I mean, I think mostly I would do plasma. I have used both, actually. I haven't used Dr. Data. Zenova, and I've used Great. No, I've just used Zenova, I think. Yeah, people here in the States can order it through Direct Labs if they have it. But I think I've only done plasma a few times. I've mostly done urine. And they don't do them a lot. Usually what I would do, and I think it's Zenova because they usually do, they do it as part of that NutriBow panel. But I really like the oats. And I think that gives me a lot of information. It doesn't tell me deficiencies of amino acids necessarily, but it gives me all those functional values, and I tend to go with that. Yeah, great. I'm glad you agree. I'm running more and more oat as well as Dutch. Yeah, I like the oat a lot. We have a whole module on oat, which is organic acid testing, and I really get so much out of it about so many systems, and I usually use Great Plains for that. So anybody else? Some of you didn't raise your hand. Tony, Glenn, Karen, Michelle, how was this for you? You want to let me know just if this was useful for you, give me a 5, and if it was kind of neutral, give me a 3, and if you didn't like it at all, give me a 1. So I like to get feedback. I want to make sure we're good. Anybody else? A lot of people on here are saying that this is good. So we'll continue to do these. Michelle said it was neutral. Karen says it was good. Yeah, Michelle, as you learn more, I'll open your line to find out why, but I think that you might be feeling like, oh, my God, this is over my head. That might be the reason. So, and you're probably the newest one on this call, so no worries. Let me just open up your line and see what you're thinking. So, Michelle?
Hey, Rita Marie, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I am... The reason I put a 3 in is it was hard to follow the call just because I couldn't hear Sequoia, and then when you were talking to her, it was like you were breaking up, so I felt like I was sort of out of the loop until the end of your talk with her, so I guess I felt like I wasn't really following what was happening, so... That's why I put a 3 in.
Problems throughout the call, or was it just at that very beginning when Lynn was having trouble too?
It was pretty much the whole time you were doing Sequoias. I don't even know if you did two people.
The whole time. So you weren't hearing well.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm
wondering
if
the best way to do these is to not bother with the maestro. We'll get to take a poll to make sure people are okay with it, but. Maybe we won't do Maestro for these at all. Maybe we'll just do Join Me because it does have a phone. My biggest problem with Join Me is if too many people are on there, then there's no way to selectively open people's lines. That's the only problem.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see where that would be an issue.
Try that. And
but, I mean, if they actually were able to call in, you could do it that way, couldn't you, or not?
Well, they are called in. Yeah. When you're on Join Me.
Oh, okay.
Join Me, but Join Me doesn't have a selective. Like, I could see you. I could
see
your hand up. I know that I need to open up you, whereas on Join Me,
I see.
They don't. But, and so,
I don't know if it was just a connection problem, like if she was somewhere where she wasn't getting good reception.
Because,
I mean, in all the other calls that I've listened to, like, it's never been that bad. And at first I thought, oh, she's just talking really low, like soft-spoken, so I, like, upped my volume on my phone. And
can you hear me now?
You. Yeah, I can hear you good now.
This is exactly what it was like all through. This is
majority of hers, anyway.
Anyway. And then
it
Sequoia's
seemed like it was worse when you were talking to her back and forth.
Maybe I was not speaking as loud.
I don't know.
Okay, so I'll watch that.
So I was just like, I just didn't follow along very well. But, I mean, then at the end when you were talking about, you were going over some of the other tests and you were going over the health tracker, it was like I was able to hear well for that part.
Okay.
But I guess I sort of felt lost the whole call because I just wasn't able to follow it from the beginning.
Okay, well, kind of
like when you get on a call late. Yeah.
Yeah, you can go on.
Do you think the recording will be any better, though?
The recording is done. I've done 2 recordings. One is just the audio through Maestro, so that might not be – well, it might be for you just fine. It might, if it was your connection, it'll be better. And if it's on the one that we do on Join Me, it'll be fine. So I'll send both of those out.
Okay. Maybe I'll try once you post those, maybe I'll look at that again and just see if I can listen in if it's any better, then listen to it again. If not, I'll just mark it off as a wash. You know what I mean? I was looking really forward to the call just because I always learn so much on all of the calls, but like I said, this was like the first time that it would seem like the reception was bad or whatever. So
I will look forward to see how it is on the recording for you. And these are the kind of things that you need to listen to over and over again anyway. Mary was saying, are you on a Mac or are you on a PC?
Well, I called in on the phone, and that was what I was listening through. And then I did the Join Me thing, so I watched through that,
so you watched,
I guess.
Just the phone. And you didn't call in on Skype,
yeah,
or did you call in on?
I just called in on the phone.
Okay.
I was, for some reason, I was thinking, was, I guess there's always an option to the, I just clicked on the Join Me for internet access. There wasn't any other thing to click on to listen to the call.
And call,
unless you called in. That's my email just had the phone access, and then the Join Me as the internet access. So I was like, oh, okay. She's going to go over stuff on Join Me, and then she's going to talk about it. So I'll call.
Right. Well, most people were on the phone, and you know, most people
had
no. It might have been your line, and the recording will be fine.
Okay.
So thank you.
Okay. I'll just try the recording. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. All right, I haven't heard from Tony. Interesting. She's usually active, and she didn't raise her hand, so maybe she's doing something else. Okay, so everybody, the phone was wonky earlier, and then we figured that out. So, yeah, thank you for that feedback. We'll just make sure that they get better and better every time, and we'll find the best way to do these. In answer to the question from Lynn about how was Sequoia talking to you, if you were on the phone, Sequoia was talking to you through my speaker on my computer. So I have my speaker on where you can, it's just not on a headset, it comes out into the room, and I have that close to my my phone, and so it's going from there into my speaker on my phone. So it's, you know, there's not the greatest transmission that way. So we'll make sure that we're really clear. Okay, I think that's it. I don't see any other questions. Tony, last chance to have your voice heard. Raise your hand if you thought this was useful at a 5 or 3 if it wasn't. So I'm going to let you guys go. I appreciate you being here. So please get it together to do your own cases. Not your own person necessarily, but start submitting your cases, and we'll have these lined up, and we'll do these once a month. All right? And then remember that this Saturday, I believe, is at 11 o'clock, we're doing the digestion, the CMDS case study call. So, yes, if you have any cases for digestion, please submit them. They may not be as extensive as this, but submit them if you have any stool tests or if you just have a case where you want to get information on, fill out the case study. And that's at 11 o'clock, sorry, 11 o'clock on this coming Saturday. That's Central Time, so you can calculate that in your own time zone. And, and we'll come there. Any questions you have about anything so far in the digestion, I apologize for not having finished the last couple of modules in there. I have been, like, being really geeky on doing the hormonal ones, and so they're taking me a lot longer than I thought. So those are the ones that are left, the hormones of the endocrinology of appetite and the hormones of digestion. So they're going to be whopper good when they come, and we'll make sure that we have some extra time to talk about them after they get released. So thank you, everybody. Have a great rest of the day, and we'll talk again super soon. Bye now.
Bye.
Open people's lines. And thank you, Tony, for commenting on the line that you thought it was good. So bye.